Life can be an extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit.
And live from the Seven Generation Games podcast studios in sunny Santa Monica, California, this is the More Than Ordinary podcast brought to you by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
I'm Anne-Maria DeMars, and it really is sunny today for once. And we have an amazing special guest in the studio, all the way from Spirit Lake, North Dakota, member of the Spirit Lake Dakota Nation, Marshall Longy, and the director of Spirit Lake Vocational Rehabilitation.
Hello, my name is Marshall. Glad to be here.
So I'm going to embarrass Marshall as much as possible, but in a good way. So those of you who are listening, perhaps are not experts on Spirit Lake. So vocational rehabilitation, we'll have Marshall explain in a little bit, but he took over this project. How many years ago has it been, Marshall?
Six years.
And it was a really interesting situation which he took it over. The previous director and assistant director and one of the counselors, a couple of their clients had all been arrested, right, by the FBI? Yeah, it was really an interesting story. I'm talking to a friend of mine. He goes, yeah, I'm driving by Spirit Lake Folk Rehab, and these guys with FBI on their jackets are carrying boxes out. So Marshall and one of the other counselors, Rick, were the only two people left that weren't indicted by the FBI in the end, right, Marsh?
That's right.
So that's got to have been interesting. You come to work one day, and you've got a boss, and your boss has got a boss, and you come to work the next day, and they're all under investigation by the FBI. It's like, hey, so now you're the acting director. So what was that like?
Yeah, it was pretty scary coming into work and, you know, you're just sitting at your desk and a guy comes up to you and he whips out his big wallet with a big FBI badge in there and says, I'm the FBI, you know, can I ask you some questions?
So does your mind start racing? What could I have possibly done? I don't remember doing anything. I think I was...
Yeah, I was like, okay, what did I sign? What did I give away? You know, what client is telling on me? No, it was just everything going on. It was so crazy.
So did you see it coming?
Kinda, but, you know, stuff like that, you just never think is going to happen there on the reservation in North Dakota.
So then the amazing rest of the story, you fast forward 6 years later, and your program is one of the model tribal vocational rehabilitation projects in the country. You've got this super high success rate. So if you could start by just explaining to people who may not know what vocational rehabilitation is, and then you could kind of give us a picture of how did you go from, oh, the FBI just arrested everybody but these two people, to one of the most successful programs in the area. How does that happen?
I think it's a lot of work with a lot of different people. Of course, working with you, bringing you back in. It's just me and Rick working together was just great. He's a great guy. We did contacted August Martin, who's our Department of Education person. He let us know what we needed to do. I kind of already knew what to do and what not to do from the last person. So I just basically, what she did, I did the opposite. So it kind of went fairly good after that.
And for people that don't know, how do you explain vocational rehabilitation to people when they say, well, what is that?
If you were to come up to me and ask me what Voc Rehab is, I would just say we're a federally funded program. We help Native Americans with disabilities get jobs or go to school. That's kind of my basic line, you know, and that kind of gets them interested in the program and wanting to know more and how can they get a job, how can they go to school, and how can we help them.
And, you know, this podcast is called More Than Ordinary, and one of the things that you've done that's more than ordinary and really extraordinary is bring back a project that was on the brink of being defunded and shut down. And I remember when you asked me to come in there as a consultant, and I looked at how much of a disarray things were in, that there were records that hadn't been updated in years. There was, you know, a whole path of following the money, and I remember people had to pay back a bunch of money that they had misused in the project. And it really seemed touch and go there for a while if this program would get closed down or not. And I think one of the things that you did that was really a good example for other people who might end up in that situation is you didn't try to snow your project officer, that you were pretty upfront with the federal program officer right away and said, here's the problems.
Right, right. I bring him everything the FBI pretty much brought to me, I brought to him. And he already knew a lot of that stuff. And some of the stuff they didn't even put in their report. So some of the stuff I told him, he didn't even know about. Yes.
Well, it's kind of like a lot of things that I see in politics. And I know, Maria, you've been a journalist for a long time. So maybe you see this too, that sometimes the cover-up gets you in trouble as much as the thing that you did. Because you hadn't really been involved in any of that, which is why the FBI was asking you instead of arresting you. But often what happens is people do things they shouldn't have, and then they get even more trouble denying that there's any problem.
One of the things that I would be interested in is, you know, you come into a program that, like you said, is really struggling, and, you know, it's touch and go. You're also dealing in vocational rehabilitation, which is, you know, very trying at times, I'm sure. So how do you approach that and not get frustrated, both with the big picture stuff that's going on as far as, is this program going to even exist, and also the day-to-day of dealing with clients and helping people get jobs and kind of all of the things that are part of that larger work that you do?
I think we just focused on the clients. I knew if we could get the clients into the program and get them working or going to school, having those success stories, I knew it would help us more than anything. And I, like Anne was talking about how successful we are, we went from, you know, maybe 5 people working a year to 30-some now.
So how do you do that?
First, we try to make sure that we know what they want to do. We make sure that we set up goals. They come in and fill out an IPE. That's just an individualized plan where we put together with them, and they're able to show us what they want to do, where they want to work, and then we show, well, we are interested in what they want to do, so we kind of help them get to that job goal.
There are a couple things that your program's been outstanding in compared to the national statistics, and one of those is youth outreach, that the average person in vocational rehabilitation, I think, is around 40. And in your program, several years ago, like when you start as director, you might have less than 5 people, you know, youth would say from 16 to 25. And now it's at least 20. So you've quadrupled that. And, you know, these numbers for people who don't realize, the Spirit Lake Nation, there's what, maybe 4,000 people that live on the reservation?
Yeah, four or 5,000.
So you're talking about 5,000 people, probably half of them are, you know, young kids. So you got, you know, 2,500, and then you got a few older people. So out of 2,000 people, you've got maybe 150 of them in your program. So that's a pretty decent percentage for you to go out and recruit. And then out of that too, you've got maybe 20, 25 youth, where other programs have maybe 3 or 5, because it's nationally a really hard sell to get young people into vocational rehabilitation. It's usually people go through a lot of struggles and they figure they can't get a job on their own, and then they come to you. So how do you get those kids to come right out of school and get them start being successful right away when other programs don't? What is it you're doing?
What we'd set up is we have one counselor that's her main job is to go visit the schools, to go visit the special ed teacher. We have different gifts that we give to the students, brochures. We have on-the-job training program. So if they're in school and they're not in basketball or, you know, nothing else is going on, you know, we offer on-the-job training so they could come in, put some money in their pocket, you know, towards not only their goal of graduating, but maybe a goal of employment afterwards, knowing what they want to do. And on the reservation, there's very few opportunities like that. So when they see us come up and showing interest of what they want to do, where they want to work, or what they want to do after school, and we'll pay, they're pretty interested.
You know, one of the things we talk a lot about too is in order to be successful, you have to be really passionate about what you're doing. I think a lot of times, especially when you're dealing with things like employment or opportunities, and you have to come in with, I guess, this passion, this excitement about what you're doing, and also kind of this continued enthusiasm, even when things are up and down. Where does that come from for you? What drives you to go to work and do the work you guys have been doing for the last 6+ years?
The people who know me, my dad is handicapped. He got in a bad car accident when I was a kid. He broke his back. He walks with a limp now. He never had none of these opportunities growing up, but he was able to overcome a lot of that on his own. But from living with him, not necessarily taking care of him, but doing stuff for him and taking that into my daily job of kind of treating them, you know, not like my father, but like I understand them and know what's going on. And I want them to do better, get over their disability, get a job, go to school. And that's kind of a lot where my motivation comes from, is my dad.
Would it be fair to say that you treat people that come into your program with respect, like if they were a member of your family, because they could have been a member of your family?
Right, right. I think number one is respect right across the board. You got to give them that respect so you can get respect. It don't matter who it is. They could come in yelling around. I would still show them that respect.
5 times 5 equals 25. 1/5 of 100 is 20. You calculate the perimeter by adding the length of all sides. 4/8, 2/4, 1/2, they're all the same things. You know how I know all these things? Because I play Seven Generation Games. Seven Generation Games teaches math skills I need to learn through cool games I want to play. And they build on each other, so just by playing awesome games, I've mastered multiplication, fractions, averages, you name it. I might be small now, but before you know it, I'll be doing advanced calculus and linear regression. And I'll be ready to do it because building a strong math foundation is essential to future math success. Seven Generation Games, games that make you smarter. Buy them at sevengenerationgames.com/buy. That's sevengenerationgames.com/buy.
Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm still Anne-Marie DeMars, and we still have with us our amazing guest,
Marshall Longy.
So Marshall is from the Spirit Lake Dakota Nation, and it's funny, somebody was telling me a while back when I said something about I was going back to the reservation, he's like, oh, and this is a guy from Northern California, he says, you're really going to a reservation? Because he thought, you people use that term, I'm going to take it back to the reservation, meaning I'm going to take it back to my office and get people's input that I have. No, I'm really going to a reservation. And I remember we were up visiting you one time, and my daughter Jennifer, who teaches in downtown LA, called me. And she teaches history, and she was explaining to her students that there are actually Native Americans alive in this country right now. And these were all kids from like downtown London. No. And she said, yeah, and my mom's on a reservation right now, like visiting with a bunch of them. No. And then they said, can we talk to one? So she calls me, and I don't remember, I gave you the phone because they wanted to know, what does the Indian sound like? So for people who have no idea, could you just kind of give a little bit of description of like what it's like on the reservation? Like, how's your teepee?
Well, we don't live in teepees anymore. That's for one. We have cars, we have houses, we got colleges, we got places to work. It's just like any other small town.
Do you even run into that in North Dakota? I mean, people who have no understanding of the fact that life on the reservation, I mean, there's certainly differences, but in a lot of ways, it's like you said, a lot of small town North Dakota across the state.
Yeah, even when we go to our state capital in Bismarck, it's still, you know, I think they can't believe we're living in the state with them. You know, it's like, what are you? Are you Mexican or what are you? You know, I'm Dakota Native American. I've been here since
before you.
Yeah, so it's weird. You go to any state in North Dakota and you would still find some people that don't know what's going on in the reservation. It's almost like, I don't know if you watch The Simpsons and they put the dome over the thing and nobody knew what was going on there. That's kind of how it feels, is that we got a dome over us and people really don't know what's going on in the reservation.
Dennis, our chief technology officer, is now going to be thrilled listening to this podcast because it has a Simpsons reference. He is insanely obsessed with The Simpsons.
I was just thinking, though, that could be an alternative revenue stream, like 1-800, dial an Indian, have questions. Here we are. But, you know, I wonder, similarly, I mean, so you guys are coming, like you said, from reservation, but small town North Dakota. Do you come out to LA and you have ideas of things that we are, like, all eating granola and kale, which I love kale, but this kind of idea, is it different than being in the big city? Because whenever I go back to North Dakota, I'm like, oh my goodness, this place is tiny and you're driving through, like, forever and I can't see anyone. You know, I mean, what's it like when you come to LA? And especially, I know you've been here before, but some of your staff, too, this is their first time here.
It's just all the people around, I think. You know, you're walking up and down the street and it's different people every day. Every time you're walking, that's someone you're never going to see again, probably. And on the reservation, it's like, oh, there's, what's his name? I'll see him again tomorrow. You know, so it's, you get people here, it's just a lot different, I think. You know, it's different than back home. Less friendly, I would say, than a smaller town place. Don't get me wrong, there's a lot of friendly people around here, but there's nothing like a small town.
Maria just had somebody spit on her at lunch.
For doing nothing. It's not like it was well-deserved.
Well, when I got here the first night, I got called a a-hole because I didn't give somebody a light from their cigarette. So that's how my evening started out when I got to LA.
I got called a crazy old lady because I pushed somebody because he spit on my daughter.
This is not quite painting the picture of LA that the California Tourism Bureau wants to promote. But maybe that's good because it's so crowded here sometimes that, you know, then we have a little more room. But no, that's one thing that I always think when I go to North Dakota, I'm like driving by and it'll be like population 126. And I'm more people than that live on my block than live in that entire town, you know, and it's very... It's a very different dynamic. And I guess we've lived both in North Dakota and California. But I also think that no matter where you come from, that's kind of where you're partial to a lot of times.
And it's really beautiful around here, you know, even with the people and everything, you know, we like seeing the beach, we like walking around, seeing the buildings. It's still a nice area. You guys got the mountains here and the ocean. It's still very beautiful here.
I remember years ago when we started Spirit Lake Consulting on the reservation, and April... And Eric would say, yeah, we're half a mile from the nearest buffalo herd, 100 miles from the nearest Starbucks. And they thought that was good. And I'm like, no, guys, buffalo are okay, but Starbucks is amazing.
I know. Now they have one in Minot. Is that the closest Starbucks to you, what? It's Grand Forks?
Yeah, Grand Forks.
And for people who are listening, how far is that?
150 miles.
No.
Hour and a half away.
I don't know though. But when I'm like driving by myself, I feel like, and I can't see anyone from either direction, I feel like you can go a little bit faster.
Oh yeah. I break the speed limit quite a bit.
That's why you need to know where that buffalo herd is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, don't talk to my dad about speeding though.
Oh yeah, he used to always make fun of me for how slow I drove and how long. Oh. So speaking of North Dakota, I will tell you the story about your dad. So one time we were at the Turtle Mountain Reservation and we're trying to get back to Spirit Lake in time for I don't know what. And Eric says, oh, I know a shortcut. Follow me. And this is in the winter. Now, I don't know how many of you have seen Dukes of Hazzard or remember that TV show. But basically the whole show was these guys that lived out in the country being chased by the police all of the time. So Eric drives like that on gravel roads. So I'm following him down these gravel roads in the middle of winter with nothing. I mean, there's nothing but snow all around us. And I can't drive any slower because I have no idea where I'm going. And it will just be come April when the thaw happens, you know, professor from California found in field. So somehow we made it back to Spirit Lake alive.
It would be interesting to have him and Rhonda race. Her goal is like she sees how long the GPS says it's going to take her to get there. And she's like, I can do it in half that.
Yeah, I think that would be a good race. I think my dad would give her a run for her money.
Whenever we get in, the GPS says, oh, it'll be 30 minutes. She'll say, I can beat that. I'm like, Rhonda, it's not like a high score in a video game, okay?
Hey, Jonah, you know what I love? Seven Generation Games.
I know, they're the best. I got them for all my nieces and nephews. They teach math and social studies. They love the games.
I wanted to get them for my niece in third grade, but she only has an iPad. I just wish they had an app.
But they do.
What?
Yes, Making Camp. It's the first app from Seven Generation Games, and it's out now in the Apple App Store and Google Play Store.
Wow, that's awesome. And they will still sell the other games too, right?
Yep, you can still get Spirit Lake, Fish Lake, and Forgotten Trail just by going to 7generationgames.com/buy to get them today.
Welcome to the third and final segment of today's More Than Ordinary podcast, brought to you by 7 Generation Games. Before we dive back into talking to Marshall, we are going to give a very, very, very heartfelt thank you to the people who have donated games for kids so that we can give them to kids who could use them.
So, shout out number one goes to Amanda Engelbrock. Thank you very much for donating a game.
And shout out number two goes to Mark McNeil, who is my favorite donator this week. Donor, not donator. Mark donated games to cover an entire school. So thank you so much, Mark. Amanda, we think you're cool too, but Mark gets the extra point in my book this week.
And we have 29 schools that asked for donations this week. So if you would like to donate for a school, there's 28 more schools after Mark. Thanks, Mark. So it's www.7, that's the number 7generationgames.com/buy. You can play Making Camp for free. You can download our games for yourself. If you don't have any children, you probably know somebody who has children. You probably like children. So you can donate to a game, give it as a gift. 7 Generation Games, we're awesome. Alrighty, so it's time for our favorite segment, many people's favorite segment, where we ask for a tip from our guests, put them on the spot. And Marshall has, I think, a life that's kind of the opposite of a lot of people's stereotype of Native Americans in the U.S. He has, you know, pretty much gone through high school. You were a pretty big basketball star in high school. Then you went to college, graduated from college, went to work for a vocational rehabilitation as a counselor. Then you became the director, and you've had a pretty successful career for the last 15 years. You're a professional. You're educated. You are a single father raising your children. And that's not a lot of people's idea when they think of Native American. They don't think of, oh, he's the director and he's a member of the State Vocational Rehabilitation Council. And so if you were going to give advice, whether to your own children or to other kids growing up on the reservation, how can you recommend they kind of navigate those minefields and end up as a you instead of as another statistic?
I would just say, you know who your family are. Know your parents. I would say that my hot tip would be that just keep trying to go through school, work on yourself.
You know, like she said, people have stereotypes about lots of communities, you know, and obviously the Native American community, there can be a lot of negative stereotypes that people have. And people might think, you know, well, you're this kid, you're growing up on the reservation, you know, nobody's going to college, or what makes you think you're going to be the big exception and you're going to go become a doctor or you're going to become a lawyer, whatever it is. How do you reach those kids? What would you say to those kids to convince them that those other people are wrong?
I would say set a goal for yourself. My big goal was to match my dad and get a doctor degree. I guess I still got a few years left. So I would say just set that goal and do whatever you can towards that goal. Just remember, you're not alone. You got a family out there. You got programs. You got Voc Rehab. You know, we'll be here. Just remember that you're not alone. And, you know, people will always help you along the way.
Now, I have a question that we don't often ask people. We did ask Jose Gonzalez this. As a parent, so as a father, you've got four girls. They're all pretty good kids. They're all doing well in school. None of them have been in trouble. What's the secret there? Because I think a lot of people listening would like to be able to say that.
It's just spending time with them and doing after school activities with them. I got one in drama. I got one in taekwondo. I got another one in dance class, basketball. They got another program. It's called After 21st Century. And it's just showing interest in all those things and bringing them to them. And my girls are the best. So it's really easy with them. They're just being there with them every day. I think just putting in time with your kids is the best overall.
I was just listening. I've got three, but only one really is doing that many activities. But I'm just thinking, not just time, miles, to bring them to every single one of those activities too, huh?
Yeah. Devil's Lake is 26 miles away from us, so a lot of those activities go on there. So I'm always driving to Devil's Lake and getting them into class or picking them up from class. And then, like, dance classes and their taekwondo, they have different things that go on in Minot and Bismarck. So just to put time in to show them that I care what they're doing, and I love them for trying, and I just want to be there. So we go to those things. I make sure to take my time and to go to those events for them.
The one thing I found with my kids, and I've heard other parents say, when you're doing all that driving, do you guys spend a lot of time talking? Is that when they tell you, like, all their little dramas at school and what they're worried about and what they're thinking about?
Well, for the first 5 minutes, it probably is. But now with the iPads and the DVDs, I'm pretty much put on my headphones because they don't want to listen to the radio because it's drowning out their iPads. So I just put on my headphones and I drive.
You're the dad / chauffeur.
Yes, exactly. Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Ordinary podcast.
For more information, please go to our website, sevengenerationgames.com. And that's seven, as in the number seven, GenerationGames.com.
If you'd like to learn more about math and history, or increase your vocabulary while at the same time having fun, you can purchase our games at 7GenerationGames.com/buy.
You can also donate and help a much-deserving student.
And as always, please tell a friend and don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
It's never too late to be more than ordinary.